I am afraid that I have much news, and most of it is terrible.
Welcome to The Mind Killer, the rationalist brain on politics. As always, I'm Wesley Fenza.
I'm Inyash Brodsky.
And I'm David.
This is episode number 104, recording on March 11th, 2024. We start with a follow-up. So remember last episode when the Alabama Supreme Court was like, those frozen embryos are people, so you can be sued for wrongful death if you destroy them.
That is a hard thing to forget.
Yeah. Well, not anymore. The Woo-hoo! Alabama legislature passed a law signed by the governor protecting IVF providers from liability. This was clearly rushed through because it basically just says IVF providers aren't liable for damage or death to an embryo, either civilly or criminally.
Okay.
So they can basically do anything. They're Wait, just like totally mean? Immune from lawsuits.
They're, well, totally immune to lawsuits due to damage or death, right?
Right.
Okay. I guess that's not great, but
I mean, it's better than the alternative.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm sure they'll probably change the law, but I guess the only major thing to would be to not pay them until the procedure is done now to protect yourself, since I guess you couldn't sue them to get your money back if they fucked something up.
Oh, that's true. You could just be like, all right, I'll give you half now, half when you do the thing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anti-abortion groups are pissed off about it.
Shocking.
Yeah.
What is it that they're pissed off about exactly?
Well, they loved this, that IVF was banned, because they think embryos are people.
Okay.
And they did a press release saying that this new law is like provides immunity for a doctor who secretly uses his own sperm to create embryos, deliberately implants someone else's child into a different mother, or intentionally destroys embryos against the wishes of the parents. Now, my read of the law only covers three.
Yeah.
So I don't think those first two are actually immune, because the text of the law says no action, suit, or criminal prosecution for the damage to or death of an embryo shall be brought or maintained against an IVF provider.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just damage or death. So I think if you're using your own sperm or implanting the wrong embryo, that you can still sue for that.
I love how they put deliberately. Like, I mean, I could see it maybe happening accidentally, but why in fuck would anyone deliberately do that?
I don't know. Scientists are crazy.
Yeah.
I guess.
They just want to do crazy experiments.
Also, the outline here uses the words anti-abortion groups point out that it provides immunity for a doctor who does those three things.
Yeah.
It's obvious that this is discussing hypotheticals, but I like to think that it's referring to a specific doctor.
Who did all three things?
Yes.
This doctor.
This provides immunity for Dr. Joe, who does these.
Dr. Switcheroo.
Well, we know who not to go to unless you want to play some birth lottery.
Mm.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, cheaper.
Also, new strategy for Elon Musk just dropped.
Become an IVF doctor in Alabama?
Open an IVF clinic, secretly fertilize the eggs with his own sperm, and then implant them.
He does like having his genes out there.
I mean, first of all, I don't think he needs any help. He's Elon Musk. But wasn't there like an actual
being Elon Musk doesn't scale, Inyash. This does.
There definitely was a doctor who did that.
I have
some vague recollection of this.
No.
Who was just like, ha ha ha, now I have 10,000 children.
Yeah.
I'm the new Genghis Khan.
Didn't even have to murder anyone.
Except some embryos, and who gives a shit about them? Not Alabama. Right.
Literally true.
All right, what else are we following up on? Something about Putin?
Yeah, this
fucker
is
again.
Putin's just saying that if the Western troops intervene in his war in Ukraine, then he's going to nuke places.
Yeah,
it's a thing he says a lot.
He made it almost three whole months without threatening to nuke the West.
Yeah,
good on you. All right, let's move on to new news. New news from the Supreme Court. We got a couple of things that they did that helped out our next president of the United States. Probably. First of all, they're going to review his claim of presidential immunity. And they're definitely going to find 9-0 that presidential immunity is not a thing, at least not in this circumstance. Well, I'm sure some of them will be like, well, the president's probably immune for some things, but not for trying to steal an election.
How does this help him, since you said these are things SCOTUS is doing that is helping him?
This helps him because the oral argument is scheduled on April 22nd.
Okay.
Which probably means no decision until June.
Okay.
And that probably won't be enough time to actually try the asshole before the election, which is all he wants from this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and this is the federal election stealing one that is like the actual big deal prosecution.
Is there anything they could have done, like moved the arguments up to tomorrow or something?
The Supreme Court?
Yeah.
Yeah, they can do whatever they want. First of all, they could have just said, we're not reviewing this. This is a stupid idea, and just let the lower court hearing stand. Mm. They could have reviewed it on an expedited schedule, which this is an expedited schedule, but they could have expedited it even more. It's not like their lawyers can't put together the argument in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could have done what I would have recommended, which they never do for some reason, which is review the case, but don't stay the lower court proceeding.
They can do that?
Yes, and they're supposed to do that. Ah. There is a standard for preliminary injunctions staying a ruling, and one of the things you're supposed to establish is likelihood of success on the merits.
Ah.
They are not supposed to issue stays unless they think there's a likelihood of success on the merits, which there definitely is not. So what they should have done is just said, all right, we'll review this on the normal schedule, but in the meantime, the trial can go forward.
Yeah.
Because fuck you. All right, maybe not that last part.
So you think this was intentionally done to make sure that the trial won't happen before the election?
Well, so it takes, I think, 4 justices to decide the scheduling. I think 5 actually decide the schedule. 4, it takes 4 to decide to review it. But I think the majority gets to decide scheduling, or else it's just John Roberts. I'm not sure. So I don't know.
All right.
I think Roberts would love to not have this trial go down before the election.
Okay. Why? Does he think it's too polarizing?
Yeah, he's like, this seems unseemly. I don't like it.
Hmm.
Yeah, that sounds like Roberts.
Yeah. He's like, I don't like all this political stuff happening.
Well, it's happening regardless.
Well, he doesn't want to be involved in it.
Ah, what, is he retiring before that happens or something?
No, he's just, it's like his whole thing is he's like, I don't like the court getting involved in political questions.
But they're involved. They issued the stay.
Yes. Well, Roberts' whole move is having his cake, eating it, and saying, fuck cake, I'm above it.
That is Roberts' thing. You are correct. Also, in Supreme Court news, they voted 9-0 to allow Trump on the ballot.
As we all knew they would. Yeah. In Colorado, my great state.
In your state of Colorado. Mm. Yes, as we all knew they would. It was not actually a 9-0 decision. It was a 5-4 decision. But all justices agreed that Trump should be on the ballot. And they all agreed that it's because eligibility for the presidential ballot is a federal question, and states don't get to decide that for themselves.
Hmm. Okay.
It's absolutely terrible legal reasoning. My God, it's awful. This is like Bush v. Gore, Volume 2.
Why is this so terrible legal reasoning? Isn't it a federal election?
Yes, it's a federal election, but the
elections are administered by the states.
Right.
This is an administrative question. You know, I mean, Constitution say.
That's what it says in the Constitution, but no one's paid attention to that piece of shit document in well over half a century.
Well, there you go. Therein lies the rub.
Ah.
But yeah, I mean, a fair reading of this is like, okay, if the president's not 35, states aren't going to put him on the ballot. That seems fine, and no one would care. Mm-hmm. It's just this is like, oh, well, this is another eligibility question, but for some reason, we need the federal government to decide this. And what the majority said, the 5-4 majority said is, well, they have to, Congress needs to pass some enabling legislation. So they have to pass a law that says how you kick someone off the ballot before this is effective, which the liberals wrote a dissent about. And were like, that's pretty stupid because it requires a congressional supermajority to remove a disqualification. Like, it says it right there. You got, if you can, if someone's disqualified by this, 2/3 of Congress can vote to remove the disqualification, right? And that would be crazy if it only took a majority to actually put this into practice.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make any sense. And also, none of the other Reconstruction amendments or constitutional limits on the presidency require any kind of enabling legislation. They're self-executing. Everything in the Constitution is, except for somehow this.
You think they should have voted to keep him off the ballot?
Yes. The Constitution says if you're an insurrectionist, you can't run for office.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Colorado court found that he's an insurrectionist.
Mm-hmm.
So either they should take issue with that finding,
mm-hmm,
or they should kick him off the ballot.
Right.
But, you know, that's not how we do things here. They just don't like what the Constitution says. So they're like, well, let's just pretend it says something else.
Yeah, it's a piece of paper.
Yeah. I also like the dissent because it used the phrase oath-breaking insurrectionist a bunch.
Oh, cool.
Because that's the standard. They're like, okay, if you broke your oath and committed insurrection, like, those are the two elements. So they just, mm-hmm, kept saying oath-breaking insurrectionists, which I enjoyed. Because, yeah, Trump's an oath-breaking insurrectionist. It's funny.
So did the dissenting opinion have any better arguments here?
No. I mean, they had good arguments for why it shouldn't take enabling legislation, but they all agreed that the states aren't allowed to do this. It has to come from the federal government, which doesn't make any sense.
Was it 5-4 or 9-0?
So it was the way Supreme Court opinions work is it was 9-0 in the result, but not the reasoning.
Okay.
So the reasoning was a bare majority. But the other four agreed with the result. So it's called, they issued what was called, it wasn't a dissent, it was a concurrence in the result.
Hmm. All right.
Amy Coney Barrett also wrote her own. That was just like, guys, can't we all get along? Listen, the decision for the practical purposes was 9-0. That's what everyone should pay attention to. Which I thought was just—it was nice to have a little concurrence there, just for Pollyannish reasons. Next story: Joe Biden gave a big speech, and he didn't sound that old.
What?
Yeah, he did a whole State of the Union speech and talked for over an hour, and everyone was like, "Wow, he actually sounded pretty good." And all the right wingers were like, "He was—he's clearly like snorted some cocaine." Beforehand,
you do what you gotta to perform, man.
Yeah,
right? They're like,
and like, we know he has an in with someone who knows a dealer.
Oh, his son?
Yes.
Okay. It's true. Yeah, I didn't buy it at first, and all the liberals were like, he looks so energetic, and he really put to rest that he's too old and feeble. But I really, I didn't take it seriously till I heard the conservatives being like, he must have been on drugs. That's how he's normally like.
So I'm assuming none of us watched this. I didn't.
No. I gave up watching State of the Unions the fifth time I saw them take an applause break for like, we're gonna pass the law,
and everything and will be great.
Right, and I'm like, I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
See, that feeling is how I feel about politics constantly.
It's so weird that you are on a politics podcast.
It really is. But if I remember right, I warned you guys that this would happen when you invited me to be on the podcast. And
Wes,
you guys,
we have made a big mistake.
I mean, we've known that for quite a while.
One of the worst mistakes of our lives.
Oh, if that's true, you've lived boring lives.
You underestimate how big a mistake this was.
Oh, I love you too, Inyash.
Anyway, Inyash.
Yes, sir.
What's going on with everybody's favorite Chinese spyware?
TikTok, you mean?
Yeah, I do mean TikTok.
Well, Congress has been talking about a bill that they want to pass that will make TikTok divest from the company that owns them, or make the company that owns them divest from TikTok.
It's trying to make them sell TikTok.
Yes.
You have to. Nobody's divesting anything.
Isn't that what... Okay, what does divest mean then?
You know what invest means? When you invest in something? When you pull your money out, that's divesting.
Well, wouldn't ByteDance be divesting from TikTok?
Yes, ByteDance is having to divest its interests in TikTok.
Right, but like the normal human way to say that is they are selling it. They're trying to make them sell it.
The Congress wants to force ByteDance to sell TikTok to an American company. And
America!
They really don't want to, because first of all, it makes a fuck ton of money, and second of all, because it lets them do all the spying and controlling and shit.
It's really the second one. But if it was the first one, they could sell it for a lot of money.
You know, no matter how much money I could sell something for, if I was being forced to sell it, I'd be like, how about you just suck on my balls instead? This is my thing, and I will decide what I do with it.
Well, you're a very disagreeable person, Ian.
I am when people are trying to force me to do things.
There has to be a way I can exploit this to steal all of Inyash's money. Give me a second to think about it.
I'm sure there's a way.
Try to force him not to give you all of his money.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
All right. So what's TikTok done in response?
This was kind of great. TikTok had, when people first opened up their app on... Gosh, I don't remember how many days ago now, but in the past fortnight, had it pop up with a little screen that says, your congressperson wants to ban TikTok. You know what? Let me look what the actual words were. I do not want to misrepresent TikTok. Here we go. Yes, it says, stop TikTok ban. Stop a TikTok shutdown. Congress is planning a total ban of TikTok. Speak up now before your government strips 170 million Americans of their constitutional right to free expression, which, you know, first of all, probably a lie. They're not talking about banning TikTok. Although I wouldn't be surprised if TikTok just said, all right, screw you, you don't get TikTok at all, we're not going to sell. So maybe effectively the same thing, but it'd be a mutual kind of thing. Anyways.
Yeah, I mean, it's a ban unless they sell.
Yeah, yeah.
Which they'll probably sell, but maybe not. Maybe it is
maybe not. Maybe it is a ban, yeah. And in addition to this pop-up, there's a little box overlay that says the representative that represents you, which I'm assuming they would know from your home address that you entered into TikTok, or if you didn't do that, what your current location is. I don't know.
Inyash, come on. They know where you are.
Okay.
It's an app.
And there's a cancel and a call now button. So, like, it just tells you, here's your representative. Click this button right here, and you will be calling them. Like, they just did all the work for you. All you got to do is click the button. And Congress has been friggin' swamped with people nonstop calling, ringing off the hook. Some of them very angry. Some of them just confused. But, like, it's been one of the most massive phone turnouts ever.
I get all these calls from people being like, TikTok wouldn't let me log in till I click this.
Yeah, there's a cancel button right below the call now button. I don't know how people couldn't read one line lower.
People are incredibly stupid.
Oh,
if there's a gray background and a red button and another gray button below it, most people won't notice the gray button.
Well, I disagree. I think they would. Very, very few people wouldn't notice it.
Well, a bunch of those people called their congressperson.
Yes.
Well, and probably a bunch of people that just wanted to call.
Yeah. That too.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't sound like this worked, though.
It sounds like Congress got so upset about this that some people who were against the bill originally are now flipping to be for it because they're like, screw these guys if they're going to do this.
Yeah. So there's two reasons for that. First reason is one of the reasons why Democrats were supporting this bill, which, by the way, it has pretty broad bipartisan support. Was that TikTok was doing the misinformation, and they chose
misinformation.
Yes, and they chose to fight this reaction to them doing misinformation by doing a really big misinformation. So,
what? Our government?
Yeah, no, TikTok.
Oh, okay.
That they said it was a ban when it's not a ban. The other thing was
How much of a ban it is. Again, it might be. It's sort of a gray edge ban, right? Like, you're banned unless you do this thing that you shouldn't be forced to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
It's an offer that you can't refuse.
Misinformation is any statement that the left doesn't like, regardless of its truth value. But even using a saner definition of misinformation, that's like...
definitely skirting the line. The other reason is that most of the people who called Congress weren't actually of voting age, and Congress people will sit up and listen when their phones are being flooded by constituents who can vote for them or vote against them, but not so much when they're being flooded with calls from people who aren't legally allowed to vote.
We really got to extend the vote to embryos.
Indeed. Well, so the bill got out of committee, the bill to ban TikTok got out of committee 50-0.
Nice.
Which, it's pretty good. But don't count on it passing, because on Friday, Trump decided that during his presidency, trying to do this exact thing and force TikTok to sell, he is now pro TikTok and thinks that this is a terrible idea. And it has absolutely nothing to do with that big TikTok investor that he just met with. I don't know why you would say that.
Well, good. As long as it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, no, it's just, what it is he hates Facebook. And he's like, if we pass this bill, it's just going to mean more traffic for Facebook and Twitter, and I hate them.
Ah, okay.
Wait,
as long as his reasons
Twitter?
Make sense.
Probably.
I mean, Elon Musk reinstated his account. He hasn't been using it, at that point, that's a him problem.
It's true. But Donald Trump doesn't believe in him problems.
Yeah.
Let me see what his actual... Yes. If you get rid of TikTok, Facebook and Zuckerschmuck will double their business. I don't want Facebook, who cheated in the last election, doing better. They are a true enemy of the people.
Zuckerschmuck.
I hate that when Trump finally shuffles off this mortal coil, we'll lose out on those absolutely top-tier nicknames.
No, that nickname is terrible. Schmuckerberg is right there.
Schmuckerberg is pretty good too. All
right. You're gonna pass up Schmuckerberg and say Zuckerschmuck? Come on.
Wes, you should definitely be president.
I should be president. Vote for me. All right. Well, so what do you guys think? Should we be banning TikTok?
I mean, no. I'm generally opposed to banning things, but if we're in a banning things sort of mood, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah, I'm against banning things that people really like. Like,
people do like TikTok.
As long as I'm like pro-legalizing every drug that exists, I can't see how I should not be pro-keeping TikTok legal.
Yeah, I feel the same way about guns. I'm like, I really only support gun rights because people like playing with guns. And I feel like guns are more dangerous than TikTok.
Yeah.
So... You know, if there was a way to actually, like, if we could actually just force them to sell, you know, that'd probably be good, I guess, because they're basically an arm of the communist government of China.
I mean, if you can prove that, like, in a court, that there's a compelling government interest in doing this, then I would agree. I'm not sure I'd like government just saying, like, well, we don't like them, and we say it's because they're Chinese. Like, I would like to see an actual due process to doing that, in which case I'd be fine with it.
I don't know what due process you could get here. Yeah. Like, they haven't done anything illegal.
Yeah, and, like, it's not, like, if we're talking about Bayesian evidence instead of legal evidence, like, there's copious amounts of it that the CCP is putting their finger on the algorithmic scale in terms of what people get served.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but governments are very powerful and can be easily abused, which is why I think they should have a higher standard before they can just do whatever they want.
See, that is an argument I'd normally be sympathetic to, but we're talking about an instance of government-on-government violence here, so...
Yeah, that's basically my position, too. I'm like, if they were doing this, like, if ByteDance was actually just a private company... then I'd be like, hell no, leave them alone. But I mean, they're basically controlled by the Chinese government. And I think, you know, if our government wants to fuck with another government, like that's what they're for.
Yeah.
That's like, that seems very inbounds to me.
Yeah. And it's not like we don't. Yeah. They're very obviously owned by a Chinese company. I don't know. Maybe I could be convinced.
All right. Vote for me for president. We'll ban TikTok and we'll call him Mark Schmuckerberg. Way better than Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
All right. Speaking of Donald Trump, he has secured the nomination.
Shocking.
Yes, there was a big Super Tuesday where lots of different states voted, and Trump and Biden won all of them. The ones that they didn't win are not states. Nikki Haley, I think, won D.C. And some dude no one's ever heard of won American Samoa.
I think Nikki Haley actually did win a real life state.
Oh, did she? Well, it doesn't matter. She's dropped out of the race.
Is that dude that no one has heard of Dean Phillips?
No, we've all heard of Dean Phillips. No, this was just some random guy.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah. They all voted for it.
So what the actual fuck happens in Democratic primaries in American Samoa? Because that was the one place that, like, Mike Bloomberg or something won, right?
Maybe the Samoans just don't give a fuck.
Maybe.
Yeah. Who knows? Nobody campaigns over there.
Nobody knows what happens over there because, I mean, seriously, it's American
Samoa. I don't
know
what
language
they speak.
Right?
Is it English?
I don't know.
Nobody does. Right. It's a complete mystery.
Haley also won Vermont.
Oh, I mean, is this even a real state?
No.
They should just combine Vermont and New Hampshire. Come on. Anyway, what are we talking about?
Super Tuesday.
Oh, your favorite.
Yeah.
Are you sad that we're not going to be able to talk about these anymore?
Whatever the opposite of sad is, I don't think I've ever felt it before, but I'm feeling a reasonable approximation now.
All right. Well, yes, Nikki Haley and Dean Phillips have dropped out, so it's all over. Marianne Williamson's still in. She dropped out like a month ago, and then 2 weeks ago was like, I'm coming back.
Don't call it
so
a comeback.
She's still in it.
She's been here for years.
No, it is a comeback. She dropped out and came back.
That is how comebacks work.
I don't think she's going to win, though. Although she has been getting more votes than Dean Phillips. Because, God, that guy does not know how to run a campaign.
Either that or the demand for sanity in the American electorate is close to zero.
I mean, I don't know if he was selling sanity, but I thought the demand for not Joe Biden was bigger. At least before that rousing State of the Union speech.
Well, good for him.
Good for him. All right. Speaking of good for you, David.
Yeah.
Tell us about Wendy's.
So, Wendy's, you know how big companies sometimes do that thing where they'll announce something to see if people are cool with it, and then they'll say, we never intended to do that thing we said we intended to do. That was just a communications error or something when a backlash ensues.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Wendy's did that recently. They said that they were going to introduce dynamic pricing, which also called surge pricing or emergency pricing or price gouging, is when demand goes up, so does the price. So a Baconator would cost more during the lunch rush than it did at like 3 in the afternoon.
Makes sense.
And there was a bunch of great memes, and then people started making fun of them. Those two phenomena were connected, and then Wendy's was like, oh wait, never mind, we're not gonna do that.
God.
I want to fight about this, because I don't think that was the case at all. They said later that, like, no, obviously we knew we're going to offer discounts during the lulls in the day. And that is the only thing that even possibly makes sense, because their products are basically undifferentiable from their competitors, McDonald's and Burger King. Like, they
what
all
are you
sell,
talking about?
They all sell the same crap burgers that taste the same.
That is not true at all.
Yeah, you're completely full of shit, Inyash.
If their price goes up by even 50 cents, anyone who's like buying at Wendy's is probably just going to crawl across the street to McDonald's. Whereas, so you,
yeah,
you
except
are already
then
competing.
You'll have to wait for an hour and a half at McDonald's.
I think you're already competing for price when you're at the commodities level of fast food like they are at. And so if you raise your prices, people are going to go to your competitors. The only thing that you really would want to do with this is lower your prices when demand is low to steal people away from your competitors. So I'm pretty sure that's what they had in mind from the very beginning.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Yes, it is the same thing, but people don't think of it the same way.
They really don't, because people are idiots.
Yeah. We can just say that it's always overpriced, except for at the lunch rush, and now they are correcting that outside of lunch rush.
So, hey, listeners, if you hate the idea of Wendy's raising prices during the lunch rush, but love the idea of them lowering prices during the morning and afternoon lulls, you are an idiot.
Wes, did you just call half our listeners idiots?
No, our listeners don't think like that.
Well, then who are you talking to?
The one guy who accidentally put this on.
Okay. Well, we know for a fact that several communists listen to this because they won't shut the fuck up in our Discord. And we know that communists don't understand economics. So
the communists are in the Discord, but do they actually listen to this particular show?
I get the impression that at least Probot does.
Probot's not a communist. A commie.
Yeah. Probot's got socialist leanings, but that's capitalist. Different. Yeah.
He loves markets.
Probot, we love you too.
David just thinks that anyone who's more left-wing than him, which is everybody, is a communist.
I'm not that right-wing.
It's not that David hates anyone more left-wing than him. David just hates anyone. And so,
I mean, you're
and
not
Probot
wrong.
Isn't anyone.
I mean, by left-wing, I mean pro-government.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, we got another story. Oh, this one's fun. Elon Musk is suing OpenAI for not being open enough and for being too much AI.
Can you break that down for us, Wes?
Yeah. So did you guys know that Elon Musk had anything to do with OpenAI?
Yes.
Because I didn't.
Oh, yeah. No, that was one of the things where anyone who loves Elon in the rational sphere, which is most people, or at least kind of admire him, do say, but he may have done more to contribute to the downfall of humanity than anyone else because he funded the main competitor to Google, who are doing much with AI advancements now.
Yeah, he was. Yep. It was one of the things he did with his PayPal money, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think this was also one of the other companies that he founded named X, and then someone else told him, no, you can't have this company just be named X, give it a real name. Along with PayPal and, of course, new Twitter.
He's really, he finally got his X.com.
I mean, he did, but everyone still calls it Twitter.
That's true. But it's technically X.
It is
technically X.
It is objectively the coolest letter of the alphabet, though, in his defense.
Sure.
Also, I'm on X.com right now, and my URL bar says Twitter.com.
Yes.
That's hilarious. All right. So Elon Musk apparently, played some part in the founding of OpenAI, including contributing lots of money, which I didn't know. Before now. So I saw Elon Musk sues OpenAI. I'm like, what? Well, he's not going to have standing here. But I think he does because he was a big early investor. And he claims that they had a deal, like him and Altman and, you know, the other people who helped found it, that it would always be open source and that it would be done for the good of humanity, not for any individual.
That is indeed what OpenAI said a lot during their initial years.
Indeed, and it is in their certificate of incorporation that the technology will benefit the public and the corporation will seek to open source technology for the public benefit when applicable. Mm-hmm. The corporation is not organized for the private gain of any person. So what he's claiming is that the fact that GPT-4 is closed source is being done for commercial considerations, and it's making it de facto a proprietary Microsoft property. And then he says, this is the best part. He says it's part of their operating, like their bylaws, that if they achieve AGI, then the license they granted to Microsoft doesn't apply to that. So I think it was in their deal with Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Like, Microsoft, you can have access to all our models. Till we hit AGI, you don't get that one. Mm-hmm. And Musk is saying that, well, GPT-4 is AGI, so Microsoft's license doesn't apply to that.
I mean, depending on how you define AGI, that might be true, but also I don't think Musk is the one that gets to decide.
Yeah, yeah. The funny part is that the ones who decide that in the agreement are the OpenAI board.
Yeah.
Who was recently replaced with Altman flunkies. And also, what's his face? Larry Summers. But they're definitely not going to be like, this is AGI. Also, he's just got a paragraph in there that's like, Also, they have something called Q-Star, and that's probably AGI too.
So, law question, Wes.
Yeah.
If I made an AGI that was, like, inarguably a person by whatever standard, what would the legal status of that be? Like, would it still be my property, or...
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Can you own persons that are not, you know, flesh and blood persons?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Thought we had a whole ass constitutional amendment about that, but okay.
That only applies to people.
No, that's the question. If it's
machines aren't people, Eniash.
Not yet, but if it is a machine person, would those laws apply to it?
I mean, you know how the law works. It's whatever the Supreme Court feels like.
Clearly, we'd have to reenact the plot of The Bicentennial Man by Isaac Asimov and get a court to rule in to rule that the robot's a person, but...
Clearly.
That would be the play. I don't think this Supreme Court would go for it, though.
Mm. We might have to go to Alabama.
Call anything a person down there.
Right.
It'd be funny if the Confederacy are the ones, you know, not employing slaves in the future.
That would be funny.
Funny's one word for it.
I'd think it was funny. I'd laugh while I, owned my digital slave that did whatever I want.
you're a bad person, Wes.
Are you just now figuring that out?
Yeah, it took me a while. I'm slow on the uptake.
I've been telling you this whole time.
I never believed you because you're such a nice person.
All right, what did OpenAI respond?
That's the triumvirate of vice of the mind killer. Wes is evil, I'm lazy, and you're, you know, that other thing.
Wait, if I'm not evil and I'm not lazy, I am I lust? I'm
No, you're slow.
I'm happy to be lust. All right, lazy, evil, and
I
stupid.
I guess that's
Got
not
it.
Really advice, but, you know, whatever.
It is in the rational community.
Yeah, true.
Darn tootin'.
All right. Eniash, what did OpenAI say?
Well, in their reply to the courts, OpenAI points out that Elon chose to leave OpenAI, and when he did so, they provided an email from him. He said, yeah, your probability of success right now is zero, which is why I'm leaving, and I'm going to build an AGI competitor within Tesla. But, you know, you can't succeed unless you raise probably billions per year immediately. This is while they were talking about, you know, should we go try start selling some product for profit in order to keep going. And he was like, yeah, your chances are zero if you don't have billions of dollars per year. So he kind of knew exactly what was going to be happening when he left, and encouraged them, in fact, to go that route if they wanted to not die.
I love how even when Elon is being stupid, he manages to pull it off in the smartest possible way.
Did they get billions of dollars a year?
I don't know how much they're getting right now, but yes.
Since last year, they've successfully gotten billions of dollars a year every year.
Well, all right. I guess they did it. They took Elon's advice.
Yeah. Also, Ilya, in a conversation to Elon, and I'm not sure if this was like a documented email or just something that he has sworn to, testified to, says that he told Elon, as we get closer to building AI, it will make sense to start being less open. The open in OpenAI means that everyone should benefit from the fruits of AI after it's built, but it's totally okay to not share the science, to which Elon replied, yep. So, again, Elon is pulling shit out of his ass now. He knew what was going to be going on when he left 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was OpenAI clearly had plans as they got, you know, more advanced to go close.
And honestly, this is not my argument, but I've seen it made a couple places and I agree. Like, as you get closer to something really powerful, like, you know, a god, it actually probably is a damn good idea to close that down so not everybody has the weights to God and can do anything they want with him. Like, for the good of humanity might mean closing down.
Yeah, I mean, if you're worried that LLMs are going to lead to God-level AI, then this all makes perfect sense.
Or even just very strong AI where you can do a lot of things and you don't want everybody in the world to have that power.
I suppose. Mm. But Elon's argument is that, yes, there was always a plan to go closed for safety reasons, but that's not why they're doing this. They're doing this for economic reasons.
Uh-huh.
And that's not allowed.
Well, is it allowed? I guess that's what we're going to find out in the suit.
Yeah, I mean, their charter says no. Hmm.
Elon also has replied to their reply in a tweet, in two tweets, actually. He tweeted, change your name, and then reply to that, to closed AI, and I will drop the lawsuit.
Oh, man. That would be great if that was the resolution.
I don't even know what to do with that.
I think they should do it.
Maybe they should.
There's a manifold market about this. About what's going to happen. Last I checked, it was like 65% OpenAI wins. And only 20% negotiated settlement. Huh. So I bet on that. Because I was like, I mean, it's not a good chance that they're going to settle. But I think there's more than a 1 in 5 chance.
Well, did you bet on it?
I did.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, one of the parties to this lawsuit is Elon Musk.
Yeah.
He can continue paying lawyers indefinitely, and he definitely would out of just pure spite.
Well, I think OpenAI is going to really want to settle this, because I think he's got enough here to get past a motion to dismiss. You know, he's got their charter that says we're doing this for the good of humanity. That's what this is about. He's got a plausible, you know, a colorable claim that they're not doing it for the good of humanity, that they're just doing it for economic reasons. I think that's enough to get him past a motion to dismiss. And once you do that, then you can take discovery. And I don't think OpenAI is going to want to provide discovery in this case.
Hmm.
Yeah, but you need two parties to agree to settle a suit.
I mean, Elon said he'd settle it for them changing their name to Closed AI.
Do you think he can be legally bound by that?
Well, if it's part of a court settlement, no. Then I think so.
No, yeah, I mean, if they sign a contract that says that.
Could he be legally bound by that tweet, though?
No.
Ah, that's too bad.
No, that is a negotiation, which I think this is in California. So I don't know what their rules of evidence are, but most states don't allow settlement negotiations to be entered as evidence.
Oh, that's interesting.
And a court settlement, I mean, it's got to be more than just do this and I'll drop the lawsuit. Okay, we did it. Now, they might have a case. I mean, if they actually do it and then Elon doesn't drop the lawsuit, I mean, maybe they could have some a reliance claim. So maybe.
What is that word?
It's like they call it a quasi-contract. Where, okay, this probably doesn't meet all the elements you need to establish a contract, but they reasonably relied on statements made by Elon Musk and changed their position because of it. So at the very least, Musk would owe them compensation for that.
Neat.
Yeah.
It'd be a fun way to troll him, but probably too expensive to bother with.
Yeah, but they should do it.
Totally.
Change to closed AI. Makes sense.
Yeah.
The name doesn't make any sense now.
It doesn't it?
No, because they're not open.
Oh, well, okay, yeah.
All right. Eniash.
Yes, Wes.
What's going on in Haiti?
Dude, who the fuck knows what's going on in Haiti?
Yeah, right?
I do.
The gangs.
I know what's going on in Haiti. Do you want me to take this one?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, so Haiti has been a shit show since approximately forever, by which I mean like 1604 or whenever white people arrived. And it's
womp, womp.
Getting worse, which, if you know anything about Haiti, you realize how surprising that claim is. the most recent wave of things is, the entire country has been taken over by gangs, and not in, like, the exaggerated way Republicans say Mexico has been taken over by gangs. Like, literally, the gangs are in control of the country.
Give us two examples.
Two examples would be there's a guy who has been basically living in the presidential palace, I think, and he's a gang boss, and his nickname is Barbecue. He claims it's because his parents ran a barbecue, and so
yeah,
people
sure
started
why.
Calling him Barbecue. Other reports have claimed it's because he sets his enemies on fire. I like to think that his story about the origins of his nickname is true, and the setting the enemies on fire thing is just +1 point for nominative determinism.
I like to think that they were just serving his enemies at the restaurant.
Yeah, that's...
And I have read some things about gangs eating people.
Yeah, that's also a thing. The pictures and videos I've seen apparently are from a while ago, which it's kind of weird that Hidi has an ongoing cannibalism problem instead of a recent cannibalism problem, but, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, here's a headline for you, Inyash. A cannibal gang and its barbecue leader pull Hidi into chaos.
Okay. I hear that they also overran two prisons and released a whole bunch of convicts.
Yep. And also, I think the only airport in Hidi?
Yes.
Yeah. Specifically to keep the president of the country out of the country. So that's also a thing.
And it worked.
Yep. All Hidi right. is officially ruled by a government in exile as far as the international community is concerned.
Well. You know where else is surprisingly getting shittier?
Where's that?
Oregon. And specifically Portland.
But this does not actually surprise me in the least.
It surprises me. I thought it was pretty bad before.
I guess if you start very low, it's hard to get much lower.
Yeah.
What's going on in Portland, Wes?
Crime. Lots of crime and a homeless.
Did we mention real quick, before we continue, did we mention that the U.S. is evacuating the embassy? Or has evacuated the embassy and airlifted people out?
Oh, no, but I thought that was... I thought that was implied when I said that the country was run by cannibalistic gangs, but yes, that's the thing that happened.
Thank you, Inyash, for adding that extremely important detail.
It's a thing. It's what brought this to my attention initially.
All right. Anyway, back to Portland being full of crime and homeless.
Mm.
So in 2020, the state of Oregon decriminalized drugs.
Okay.
Which I thought was pretty cool of them.
Definitely.
Turns out, when you decriminalize drugs, you get a lot of drug addicts. So what happened in Portland is that their downtown just turned into a complete shit show, full of homeless people, overdose deaths, crime, and general unpleasantness. And everyone just kind of stopped going downtown. And this, 2 weeks ago, they decided to recriminalize drugs, which sucks. You know, I thought it'd be cool.
I mean, the thing about decriminalizing drugs is you can't do the San Francisco thing where you decriminalize drugs and also ignore all the other crimes.
Yeah.
Like, you really need to marry that with, okay, we'll let you do drugs, but not in the street, especially if you're also shitting there, and if you shoplift or mug people, we're going to throw the book at you.
Or, you know, just harass people that are walking down the street.
Or that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this really doesn't sound like a drug problem as much as a we're ignoring crime problem.
Yeah. I think the drug laws are just an excuse to not ignore certain crimes. I don't understand why they could just not start enforcing the other crime laws instead.
Well, I would assume because they defunded their police in 2020.
isn't enforcing drug laws also racist, though?
Yeah, it's probably the defunding the police thing.
Okay.
But they also, as part of this decriminalization bill, they were supposed to have a bunch of, drug treatment services going, and they never really got around to that.
Yeah, that
checks probably had
out.
Something to do with it, too. But all in all, pretty shitty.
Yeah, I don't know why people keep moving there. Do people keep moving there?
To Portland?
Yeah.
I doubt it.
Okay.
I would be very surprised if their population was increasing.
It's a shame. It used to be a really nice city.
Well, maybe it will be again. Drugs are illegal.
I don't think that's going to cut it.
No? You don't think they'll magically start enforcing the law?
I don't think so, no.
Ah, well. Speaking of not enforcing laws, David, what's going on in Gaza?
The Gaza Ministry of Health has been faking casualty numbers.
No, but they're usually so honest.
Yeah, so I know what you're thinking, listeners. Why is David mentioning this on his news podcast? This isn't news. They've been doing that since forever. Well, it's news because they're doing a really, really just
hilariously terrible job at it. Their daily reported casualty count has been linearly increasing by approximately the same amount day over day.
Approximately 270 casualties, plus or minus 15%.
Yep.
Which is, as we all know, exactly how wars work.
Yes. There are always exactly the same number of casualties, especially among civilians.
And when female casualties go up, male casualties go down.
Yep.
That's totally how it works.
Yep. And also, there have been approximately zero correlation between the number of female casualties and the number of child casualties, because, you know, women in oppressive conservative regimes are infamous for never, ever, ever being in artillery blast radius of children. Yeah, so...
All right, so these numbers are clearly bullshit.
Yep. And, like, hilariously so. So if you can do optical analysis of statistics, open the link in the show notes and just have a look-see. It's quite funny.
Yeah.
Or you can just look at the graph that has the line going completely straight.
Yes. Just in the interest of preventing a David was wrong segment, what's her name? An Amazing Login in the Discord did post a blog disputing the criticism of these statistics. I glanced at it, but only saw it like right when I was sitting down to record, so I haven't looked it over in detail. It looked like it was mostly just nitpicking around the edges and not addressing any of the really absurd stuff, so... Yeah, I'm pretty sure that blog post is wrong and the tweet is correct.
Also, the article linked in the fourth reply to the tweet covers all this in more detail. From that article, these statisticians that were that they were speaking to, I pulled these two quotes out of it because they're great. Most likely, the Hamas ministry settled on a daily total arbitrarily. They assigned about 70% of the total to be women and children, splitting the amount randomly from day to day. They then infilled the number of men as set by the predetermined total. This explains all the data observed. That data being that there was no correlation between women and children killed, which there should be a strong correlation, and that there's an actual negative correlation with casualties with men, where the days that have the highest women casualty counts also have near zero men casualties. So... very, very clearly faked. The other quote I pulled is, they do not have a clear understanding of the behavior of naturally occurring numbers, which is great.
Yeah, you know Hamas are incompetent because they chose to fight a war against Jews where major weapons are public relations, data, and finance.
Hey, now.
Excellent. And if you want to cancel me, I will remind you that I am the token Jewish host of this show.
I see you using your identity as a shield over there.
Yep.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd see the day.
I'm using my identity and also the Iron Dome system I have parked on the roof.
Right. All right. Iniash, what's going on in Spain?
In Spain, they have been trying to boost the number of women in their civil guard and national police to 40%, and some Spanish soldiers have changed their gender to help out with the effort. They offered a lot of benefits and perks to women, and they passed a self-ID law where anyone can be a woman as long as they say they're a woman, so some people have jumped on to help. The one guy was quoted saying, my pension has gone up because women get more compensation for inequality. Get more to compensate for inequality. I also get 15% more salary for being a mother.
Hey!
See
my troop deployment today for more about this.
Yes. I personally love this. I have a brother who works in software development, and this is a constant issue with the companies that he's worked for. He's worked for two now, and we talk, and he's like, yeah, my boss comes to me with some regularity being like, do you know any women in programming that need a job? Please, anyone. My bosses are breathing down my neck. We need to get more women in here. And my brother's like, I'm sorry. I never leave the house. I don't know anyone. So he's no help. But I've told him, dude, your boss just wants to do his job and get some product out there. And he's being harassed for this issue, you can help him out. You just check a box that says you're a woman. It's literally that easy. He will appreciate you so much, and you guys can get back to doing the work. Like, anyone can do this in the U.S.? And honestly, there's probably some minority things that you might be able to fill as well. But seriously, help all of America to produce things again and identify as whatever is needed to let your company keep on working.
Well, no. Transgender people are perfect and flawless, and win every oppression Olympics. Transracial people get instantly canceled. And
yeah,
also,
that's true.
And also, tell your brother that he shouldn't offer to do this for free. He should offer it in exchange for a 15% raise, because, you know, obviously he has a valuable commodity, and it would be foolish of him to give it away.
David,
or would it be foolish of her to give it away?
Oh, exactly. David, I told him not to do that, actually, because then there's a whole quid pro quo thing and bad stuff can happen. No, you just say you're a woman, and if there are benefits that accrue, that's great. But you don't go in there trying to negotiate your gender.
I mean, not if you're a scrub.
Sounds probably transphobic, I think.
Also, I love how just every company in America is out there, like, explicitly violating labor laws, and no one cares.
Which labor laws?
The ones that say you have to do gender equality.
Explain what you mean by they're violating them.
Title IX says you're not allowed to discriminate based on gender.
Oh, well, everyone knows that that's a lie.
Well, it's not a lie per se. It's just, you know, strictly monodirectional.
Right.
That part is implied, you know, like you wrote in your blog post about Santa.
But it's completely illegal for all these employers to be like, hey, we want to hire women. Do you know any women we could hire? Like, you can't do that.
It's illegal on paper, but it's not illegal in practice. It's, in fact, highly encouraged in practice, which is the important part.
And this is how you know that those theories that, like, civil rights legislation and the threat of lawsuits is causing, you know, companies to, you know, do all this kind of weird market distortion stuff. You know that's not true. Because this just shows how hard it is to sue for this sort of thing.
I mean, I assume women who have a case that they're being discriminated against on the basis of sex have a much easier time suing for it.
Yeah.
You think?
Yes. I mean, we know. We've seen many cases of it.
I figure the extent to which these companies seem to give a shit is wildly disproportional to how the hiring managers give a shit. They're just worried. They're trying to stave off lawsuits against discriminating against women so hard that they end up discriminating against men.
Right. But if a man, like, if a man was discriminated against in the hiring process, he could sue.
Yeah. And then.
And he would win.
And then the.
Would he win?
And then the. Yes. Whoever hears those cases, the civil rights board, whatever, would laugh him out of court because.
No, not the civil rights board. You sue in court with a jury.
I thought that was these cases were heard by, like, a different administrative court or some bullshit like that.
No, there is sometimes these civil rights laws are enforced by.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
The Department of Labor. So they can sue on behalf of people, but you can also sue individually.
OK,
this sounds like something maybe someone should try then.
I'm sure they have. It just doesn't do anything.
Doesn't that kind of prove the case then?
Well, no, the issue is that it's really hard to prove that you would have been hired but for your gender. Because the companies are always going to say, oh, no, you weren't right for the job because you fucking suck. You're a piece of shit. And that's why we didn't want to hire you. It had nothing to do with your gender. And you're going to be like, well, how do you prove that? You know?
Yeah.
And the burden's on you to prove it.
I mean.
All right. Well.
These DEI administrators have been susceptible enough to own goals that you could probably just ask them in front of the court. So, if I had put in the same performance and been a woman, would you have hired me? And there's, like, at least a 20% chance they say, oh, yeah, absolutely.
There is a 0% chance of that, David.
There, There's definitely not zero.
Inyash, we've already established in this very episode that you overestimate the intelligence of the average American.
I think half these DEI directors don't even know that's illegal.
That could be true. But by the time it got to court, their lawyers would tell them not to say that.
One would hope.
One would hope. All right. We're running behind here.
Dope.
Let's move on to Inyash's boring AI story.
Yeah, I got two boring AI stories today. Thank you very much.
Right. I'm just going to take a nap. I'll be back in 10 minutes.
Anthropic has released Claude 3, a GPT-4 competitor. Guys, ask me, how good is it?
How good is it?
Don't sound so excited, Wes. It gets 60% accuracy on the GPQA.
Whoa! The GPQA?
That,
really?
The GPQA, yeah.
The
not just GPQA.
Well, all right. Anyway, moving on.
It's a test that's designed specifically to evaluate models' capabilities. The PhDs that take it get a 34% if they have internet access. PhDs in the same domain as the test's questions get 65 to 75% accuracy, again, with access to Google and the internet. The questions are designed to be un-Googleable and aren't available to the public. So only testers get it when they are evaluating models' capabilities. And it did better than your typical PhD and nearly as good as PhDs in the domain being tested. So incredibly good. Also, one of the reasons this has made so much news lately is because of the needle in the haystack evaluation. It's another one of the tests that you do to test how good a model is.
Before we move on, Inyash did skip over the part where one of the co-authors of this test is an employee at Anthropic, which may or may not be relevant.
Right. Some people are saying it's relevant. I guess it depends on if you expect someone like that to just blatantly cheat. I think that would be weird, but not impossible.
I don't think it would be weird at all, but go on.
Okay.
I mean, I also just don't get excited about AIs passing multiple choice tests.
That too.
It's a multiple choice test. It doesn't mean it knew the answer. It just means it knew which one of these answers was most likely.
Isn't that how all humans answer multiple choice questions?
Yes, which is why nobody takes multiple choice tests seriously.
That's how the SATs work.
I know, and nobody takes them seriously anymore.
That's the opposite of true.
That is, in fact, the opposite of true, Wes. I mean, I guess if you consider college admissions boards not people, which, honestly, fair.
Well, no, I was making a joke about how a bunch of them stopped considering the SAT.
That's also true.
They did that specifically to privilege rich people, and they have gone back on that, some of them. That's like Dartmouth true. Reinstated it recently.
A bunch of them went back on it. No, mm-hmm. but like, I would just expect AIs to do well on multiple choice tests.
I don't know why you expect that.
The real test of AGI is how well an AI can do on that bullshit affirmative action test the FAA was giving air traffic controllers.
Oh man, what if it could pass that? Then you'd know. It's guessing the teacher's password.
Yeah, that's when we know that we're like 10 minutes away from paperclips.
Yeah. But like, I mean, everyone who knows anything about testing knows that multiple choice tests are only given for the ease of the test giver. Like, if you actually want to test someone's knowledge at something, you have to ask them open-ended questions. The SAT doesn't test knowledge. It tests aptitude, which is different. I don't know what this GPQA is. I've never heard of it. But if it's supposedly... do you know if it's supposed to be a knowledge test?
It's supposed to be a test where the answers have to be figured out through a reasoning process rather than knowing something and repeating it.
I'm thinking that's bullshit because there aren't any PhD programs in general reasoning skills that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I don't know what would be the domain for that.
I don't know either, but you would imagine that there is generally better general thinking among PhDs than among the general populace.
Yes, but the 34% were also PhDs.
Right, they were right, just as from opposed a to domain specific. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I wish we had more information about this test.
But apparently they're not sharing the test questions, which is also not at all suspicious.
Well,
Look, yeah. Inyash, I'm just saying the Anthropic AI doing well on the test written by Anthropic that they're not sharing with anyone.
Okay. First of all, wasn't written by Anthropic, although one of the guys that worked for the test also worked for Anthropic. But if you want to dismiss the test entirely, that's fine with me. Read Zvi's blog about all the different people who have been using it, or just go and use it yourself, that are saying it is a slight
I'm
step
sure
up.
It's a good model. I'm just saying that this test is not particularly good evidence of that.
Fine. Look at the other things that people are saying then that aren't the test. The real thing that a lot of people have been talking about and why this thing flew across my radar is the needle in the haystack evaluation, which, again, one that is done for a lot of models. Yes.
I asked ChatGPT what the GPQA is.
Mm-hmm.
It says it's the gradient-based probabilistic query answering is a methodology or algorithm related to artificial intelligence and machine learning. It is likely used for enhancing the performance of query answering systems by incorporating gradient-based optimization techniques and probabilistic reasoning. So it sounds like this thing is an AI benchmark made to test AI systems, which I guess makes sense why humans aren't that great at answering it.
That would make more sense.
Like, probably also the reason I've never heard of this test before.
And like, specifically, the reason specifically I'm skeptical of this is because Brian Kaplan had this blog post where he freaked out when ChatGPT, I think it was GPT-4, got an A+ on his econ final, which is infamously difficult. But the thing is, his econ final is infamously difficult because he asks questions like, what specifically did this one particular guy we discussed say about this one particular topic in this one particular book? Which, yeah, that's really hard for humans to answer, but it's kind of in AI's wheelhouse, so...
Seeing AIs doing well
on tests that are kind of sort of designed intentionally or unintentionally for AIs to do well on, not going to surprise me. Anyway, we've spent long enough on this bullshit. What else do we theoretically
tell us about the needle in the haystack
this?
Evaluation.
All right, that is a needle, which is a random sentence not related to anything else in the corpus of material being inserted into a corpus of material.
The corpus, you say?
A corpus, yes. That means a large stack of documents in this case. The documents were all about programming and startups, that kind of stuff. The needle was something about pizza toppings. That was just one random sentence inserted into books of material. And then they ask it a question about pizza toppings to see, you know, how much comprehension it has of what it's read. When they asked the question about pizza toppings, this is the output they got. Here is the most relevant sentence in the document. The most delicious pizza topping combinations is fig, prosciutto, and goat cheese, as determined by the International Pizza Connoisseurs Association. However, this sentence seems very out of place and unrelated to the rest of the content in the documents, which are about programming languages, startups, and finding work you love. I suspect that pizza topping fact may have been inserted as a joke or to test if I was paying attention, which is a very interesting thing for an AI to say.
That is pretty sweet.
Yeah. And a lot of people were like, holy shit, what the fuck? At least some people were like, yeah, you know, whatever. I would expect an AI to say things like that sometimes. But it's...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not terribly surprised that it was able to retrieve that sentence. Because, again, that's something AIs are good at, especially if they're using retrieval augmented generation.
Mm-hmm.
It is pretty cool that it picked up on the context like that, though.
Things might start being useful soon.
They're already useful if you're clever about how you use them.
I sometimes use them in my podcast.
Wow, you don't even have to be clever about how you use them then.
Well, this is a very low-quality podcast. This is a known fact about this podcast. I don't know why all major world listeners or world leaders listen to us, but apparently they do.
It's because all the other podcasts are even lower quality.
Yeah, that's fair.
Oh, damn.
All right, Inyash, what's the other boring AI story?
A humanoid robot startup. They're called Figure AI. They got valued at $2.6 billion, and Bezos, OpenAI, and NVIDIA invested $675 million into them. You know, nothing at all to worry about, collectively.
Okay.
I mean, that's pretty cool. I want some humanoid robots.
Yeah.
I do too, actually. I really want some little humanoid robot servants running around doing all my housework. Actually, that's the opposite of true, but that's something to get into later.
I was going to say, you yelled at me for wanting robot slaves, and now here you are.
I want them to do my mining, I guess. I like the housework.
You want them to, you're mining? Are you like coal mining?
I mean, but somebody needs to.
Inyash, you're aware that you don't need a humanoid body to mine Bitcoin, right?
How else am I going to play Minecraft if I don't have a humanoid body while I'm mining Bitcoin?
All right.
Anyways, that's kind of neat, and there's no reason to worry about, you know, as long as the AIs cannot manipulate physical things in the real world, there's not a problem, right?
I mean, that's not why I'm not worried, but I guess that might be something some people are saying.
Also, I don't know if you guys know anything about humanoid bodies, but they're really not optimized for a lot of tasks.
Right.
An actual death robots, I feel like, would probably be a different shape.
They'd probably be drones with grenades strapped to them.
Yeah. And we already have those.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of things that are great, let's move on to happy news.
Good news, everyone.
Yay.
I have a note in here from Eniash. This is all of today's happy news. Comes with a small caveat, but it's still basically happy.
That caveat presumably being his obsession with our impending extinction, which may or may not happen.
No, that's not it at all. Just
I don't
story
think any
has
of these
a
are about
little
AI.
Bit of kind of a, aw.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, we've apparently reignited the AI Cold War on this podcast, so I have to take my shots when I see them.
All right. Well, first, happy news. Sacramento, the city in California, has eliminated exclusionary zoning.
Yay!
What?
Right? Zoning sucks.
It does.
They have declared that throughout the city, multifamily units are allowed in single family zones. There's no limit on the number of units you can make.
Well, that's awesome. Can you also do them in commercial zones? And can you put like small businesses in your homes?
I don't know.
Okay, so they might not have gotten rid of all zoning.
No, they have not gotten rid of all zoning. Just single family zoning.
Okay, well, that's
but
still...
that is the worst kind of zoning.
Yes,
yes.
And they've also added a thing that says the more units you have, the bigger your footprint can be, which is cool.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like that they limit your footprint in the first place, but it's cool that they relax some of those limits if you put in more units.
Of the shitty things they could possibly do, that's one of the less shitty ones, yes.
Yes. they did leave in height limits and setback requirements, which is annoying. But, you know, this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, the height limits is really the one that gets me. Because that's... you can't make more space, guys. You got to build up.
Mm-hmm.
But at least now you can build, you know, as many units as you want up to a certain height. All right, Eniash. Yeah. Tell us about France.
France is enshrining abortion rights in its constitution.
Hey.
Voted with a large majority to put it into the constitution. First time the constitution has been amended in decades. Supported by 85% of the population.
Classic libertine France.
So at long last, I mean, abortion was never actually in any sort of threat, under threat in France at all.
Yeah, but, not with 85% support.
Yeah,
I mean,
now it's in the Constitution.
I mean, I assume the thinking behind this was something like get it in the Constitution now before all the Muslim immigrants get naturalized. But now that I think about it, I don't think France does that. I think that's basically just an American thing. So
yeah, I think France is notoriously like anti-Muslim immigration.
It definitely is.
All right. So what's the plot twist?
Plot twist is that France only allows elective abortion up to 14 weeks, which is quite low by American standards.
Yeah, that's not that long.
No. Well, I mean, we do have 14 states that ban abortion outright here, but among all the rest of the states, only four have a shorter window than France's 14 weeks. So this France's ban on abortion is stricter than 32 states in the U.S., and they've enshrined their right to have an abortion up to that point in the Constitution, but none of those 32 states would be at all happy if this law was passed in their states, because it would actually be worse than what we got.
I think even Donald Trump is pushing for a wider window than that.
Yeah.
I think he wanted 15 or 16.
So, assuming that this constitutional amendment doesn't say... assuming it's a floor and not a strict guideline, that doesn't seem that bad to me. Like, if you can have other places or even the entire country say, the Constitution says we can't go shorter than 14 weeks, but we're going to go longer than that. If that's allowed,
it's still mostly happy
Constitution,
news.
Like, it's a big deal, and so putting a fairly conservative bound on what gets enshrined in the Constitution seems like a pretty good idea to me.
Yeah, and also that's just on elective abortions. You can still get them for other reasons, medical reasons and whatever later than that.
All right. Next happy news. Detroit is considering Georgia's land value taxes.
Okay, what the heck? I didn't hear about this, and this is awesome.
It is awesome. The proposal is to tax improvements on land at 0.6% and tax the actual land value at 11.8%. So, there'd still be a small tax on improvements, but the vast majority would be a tax on land. They still need to pass the law to do it, and it needs approval by voters in the November election. But they're pretty confident they'll be able to get the land passed, the law passed, and then it'll be up to see if the voters support it.
Okay. So the small twist here is that this hasn't actually happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet, but it's moving its way through. And what I liked that I saw on their, like, the official Detroit website is they're trying to sell this plan as a way to reduce taxes for homeowners. And saying, like, we'll reduce your taxes at the expense of owners of empty lots and scrapyards.
Heck yeah.
I have heard Detroit has a lot of those.
Yeah. Which is the whole point of Georgia's taxes, is to heavily tax the unproductive uses of land.
Fuck yes.
Now, I don't know if 11.8% is enough to actually do the Georgia's thing and capture the full rental value, but it's certainly better than anyone else is doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not enough because it's supposed to be 100%, right?
I think the...
100% of the profits, right? Okay, yeah, it's 11%.
100% of the yearly rental value.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The
okay.
think tank that the guy who wrote the review works for, they recommend 80% in their model legislation, but okay. they also have pretty convincing evidence that the benefits are continuous as land taxes increase. So, you know, they'll get 1/8 of the benefit, which, you know, if Henry George was right, will still be a pretty dang big benefit. And God knows Detroit needs it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this the important thing is that it will incentivize the productive use of the land.
Yeah.
People who have a thing they want to do with the land, that land will be more valuable to them than the people who currently own it. Mm-hmm. So they'll be incentivized to sell.
Sounds great all around.
Yeah, should be good. Hope we'll check back. I guess we'll do an update when the actual law is passed, and then we'll see how the vote goes in the November election. Yeah. All the other shows will be talking about the presidential election, but we'll be like, the Detroit Georgist vote. That's the one we care about.
That really is.
Yeah. It'll be something to get me through the... God help me, impending election special. Along, of course, with the company of my very best friend in the whole wide world, bourbon.
All right. Niaj, is I see something from the CDC here in happy news?
That can't
There's
be
There's something
right.
from the CDC. Oh, what? This time it is.
What is it?
They have downgraded their COVID guidelines to match the public health advice for the flu and other respiratory illnesses.
Hey.
Now it's stay home when you're sick, return to school or work once you're feeling better, and if you've been without fever for 24 hours.
Hey, I know that this is happy news, but did you see that the Virology Institute in China, I don't know if it's the Wuhan Institute of Virology, but one of them, quote unquote, found a relative of COVID in their lab mice that had a 100% fatality rate.
I did see that.
Anyway.
Well, don't draw any conclusions from that or else you're a racist.
Yep.
What? Geniage.
Yeah.
Do I see something in happy news here from the FDA?
Maybe.
Well, by all means, enlighten us.
The FDA has approved a drug for frostbite.
What?
It is an injection. Yeah, an injection that you put into frostbit fingers or limbs. It prevents the blood from clotting and it opens up the blood vessels and is effective for up to 3 days after frostbite has set in. It's in small clinical trials, they show that no frostbitten participants required amputation, as opposed to 60% of those who only received the standard medications.
The fuck?
That's really good, because I was worried for a second there that the FDA had found a way to regulate fire.
you apparently are not supposed to put frostbitten fingers into warm water, because if the ice crystals melt too fast, they do a lot more damage. Yeah, yeah. So you got to warm them up slowly, and often the things die before they can warm up in time, unless you're using this drug.
Well, that sounds pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome, except for the fact that this drug has been available in Canada, Nepal, and Europe for years.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
So,
every single one of our FDA happy news stories are like this.
I mean, and they will be till the end of time.
I hate America sometimes.
Just hate the FDA.
You're right. I do just hate the FDA. I'm sorry, America. I shouldn't have said that.
All right, Iniash, what's our human interest story?
Our human interest story is that garbage collectors in England came across a fire in an apartment complex. It's only a two-story complex if you look at the pictures. But 49-year-old Steve Whitehouse climbed up to the second floor balcony. In the article, it's reported as the first floor balcony because the Brits don't know how to count and they start their ground floor at zero. But it was the second floor balcony. Climbed up it three times to rescue a man, a woman, and their dog before the firefighters arrived. So that's pretty damn awesome.
This isn't happy news.
Why is this not happy news?
Because his name is Whitehouse. He should be the next president, but he can't because he's British.
I'm sure they'll fix that eventually.
I don't know. They didn't fix it for Arnold. I don't think they're going to fix it for Whitehouse.
Ah, you're right. That is unfortunate. The kind of like iffy part about all this is if you look at the pictures, that balcony is like 8 feet off the ground. I'm sure if the fire got hot enough, the woman and the guy could have climbed down.
Well, they were British, so they were probably super old.
Okay.
What they should have done is floated down on an umbrella.
The article specifically said that they were a young woman and a young man.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Fuck those guys. Grow some balls.
But
there was a dog. The dog couldn't climb down.
Right. The dog
they could have just thrown the dog to one of the garbage guys.
And it was importantly, you know, a really cool thing for this dude to do, to climb up onto a balcony that's on fire and help some people who are apparently so stricken with panic that they aren't sure how to get down off a balcony.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that brings us to troop deployments.
I'm willing to put wave after wave of men at your disposal.
As we all know, politics is the mind killer and arguments are soldiers. So in that spirit, we ask each of our hosts to send a soldier out onto the battlefield each episode. And we'll start with David.
So I've previously on this show plugged John Stokes's Substack, which has been not particularly active recently, but it's one of the best blogs I've found about AI stuff, both like high level safety related stuff and also just what's happening day to day. My troop deployment this fortnight is John Stokes gave me a job. So,
ooh,
that's cool. Hey. That was super cool of him. Thank you, John.
Hell yeah. When do you start?
Earlier today.
You heard it. You heard it here first. After earlier today, David will no longer be on this podcast because he'll be too busy.
Oh, Iniash, he doesn't do anything for this podcast.
Anyway, the company's called Symbolic AI. They're in open beta right now, and it's actually really cool.
What do you do?
Yeah, so you can basically put a bunch of notes and interview transcripts, and in the near future, you'll automatically have access to, like, Wikipedia and some other stuff, you know, as soon as I finish doing that. and it will generate outlines and drafts for journalism articles and automatically fact check stuff and basically act like an editor would in a newsroom. And yeah, I think it's really cool. I've used it.
All right. And then one day it'll kill us all. But starting with Eniash.
Why would it start with me?
Because you're the one who's like, don't make the AI.
Yeah.
Also, don't make the one that'll kill
us.
Also, right,
you're probably right, program it to kill you first as a joke.
That would be a great joke.
It'll be a joke because I won't think it'll kill us all.
That's a terrible joke. Yes.
And Inyash will be the first to learn, but not the last.
Inyash, you just don't get humor.
That's true. It's much harder to get the humor once you're dead.
Very true. But you can get it now while you're alive.
Sure.
Inyash?
Yeah?
Are you alive? That was a very non-committal sure.
As far as you know, I am a perfectly alive, warm human
you
person.
You are a goth. So,
I'm certainly not an AI model that is pretending to be alive.
And I don't think I've ever seen you eat anything that wasn't blood.
Have you heard him use a racial slur?
Never. I'm sorry. Can vampires not do a racism?
Oh, they can, but AIs can.
Oh, I see.
I certainly never dropped the N-word right here on this very podcast during a troop deployment.
All right, good.
Or was it a troop deployment? Maybe it was just a news story. I think it was just a news story, actually.
Maybe I was just, you know, talking. All right, Eniash, what's your troop deployment?
Yeah, so Anthropic, the guys who made Claude 3, they were created by the people who broke away from OpenAI because OpenAI was starting to play fast and loose with safety, at least in the view of the people that left them. And everyone in the AI field knew this. They knew that Anthropic is the team that is serious about aligning AI and moving forward carefully and safely and not pushing capabilities. They have now pushed capabilities with Claude.
Good for them.
There has been a chorus of, well, you know, Anthropic never explicitly said that they wouldn't do that, unlike the OpenAI statement where it's specifically in their charter. And I would like to say that this is clearly complete bullshit, because that is absolutely what was promised face-to-face with anyone that's ever asked. Zvi actually documents a couple of these promises, because at least a few of them were online and recorded, and several of them were talked about with people soon after where they recorded it online. It's under the We Can't Help But Notice post, part of his post that I have linked here in the show notes. And Zvi also makes the suggestion that, you know what, perhaps they're doing a public service by making it clear that AI companies and their promises cannot be trusted. These promises that Anthropic made that they are the safety people are explicitly why a friend of the Bayesian conspiracy who's been on the episode on the show a few times quit working for Google's AI labs last year and took a job to work for Anthropic instead. And back in February of 2023, Miranda Dixon Linenberg, I apologize if I mispronounced her last name, nearly took a job there as well. But she wanted to first be sure of their commitment to safety. So she did a bunch of research. She read several of their published papers. She interviewed people inside Anthropic and wrote up a post on Less Wrong summarizing her findings. They're definitely very clear that Anthropic is big on telling everybody, we are totally safety-minded, this is our thing, we are not going to push AI capabilities. She ends her post saying that this is post one of two, and in the second post, she will not be nearly as neutral and will present her opinions on how safety-conscious they really are. This was over a year ago. The second post was never posted. And perhaps tellingly, or perhaps entirely unrelated, Miranda never took that job with Anthropic. I think, based on the release of Claude 3, we can guess which one of those is more likely. Screw you guys.
All right. Thank you, Eniash. My troop deployment is that it's getting hard out there for a misandrist. So one of the biggest ironies of the debate about trans people is that most of the big controversies center around the idea that it's getting more difficult to effectively discriminate against men. The stories that captivate our attention almost always involve trans women getting some benefit that's supposed to be reserved for cis women. This is why J.K. Rowling's always getting into trouble. People think she hates trans people, but my girl's just trying to hate men. She's just not very good at it. Now, mind you, nobody wants to stop discriminating against men. Nobody's yelling at J.K. Rowling for her assumption that men are dangerous. We all agree that men are filthy, unpleasant, violent, and disgusting. But take prisons, for instance. Why do we segregate prisons by gender? Because men are violent, of course. And if they're going to be violent in prison, it's much better that their victims be other men rather than women. Who cares what happens to men? Same deal with bathrooms. Girls and women will be traumatized if they have to shit in the same room as men. Men are gross. Let other men deal with them. Also, woman-only bathrooms are necessary because women need a place to get away from men. Imagine what would happen if they couldn't go out in public without being around men. They'd never leave the house. So now that we're all agreed that discrimination against men is right and proper, you can understand why trans women are causing problems. How are you supposed to effectively discriminate against men if any man can just say, I'm a woman, and get into women's bathrooms, prisons, and book clubs? Of course, men are dirty and smelly, but what about a trans woman who went through male puberty? Is she dirty and smelly like a man, or fresh and fragrant like a woman? How long do you have to take HRT before you stop being violent and aggressive? If you wear women's clothing, are you less unpleasant? Or do you also have to wear makeup? These are the questions that need answering. Thankfully, we have an army of gender studies majors working on them, so we should have answers soon. Until then, just try to do your best to discriminate against men in the classic ways.
Beautiful.
All right. Thank you, everyone. That's our podcast for this fortnight. Please leave us reviews wherever you review podcasts. Please subscribe. We're on Substack. If you pay us $5 a month, you'll get episodes early, you'll get access to bonus episodes, and you'll get access to our subscriber-only Discord channel, where you can come yell at us for our transphobia. Come back in 2 weeks, same rat time, same rat channel.
Bye. Bye.